Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome in. Am I on the air? Can you hear me? Can you hear me in the back? I'm Tim Wildman. Welcome to the program Today's Issues here on, pardon me, got a little cough going, American Family Radio. Appreciate you joining us. Again, this program right here is called Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Ed is co-hosting with me today, as is Fred Jackson, News Director of American Family Radio. Good morning, Fred.
Good to be back.
From Canada?
From Canada. Yeah.
Good trip?
I had a wonderful trip.
Yeah, you stayed 8 or 10 days, didn't you?
8 or 10 days, nice cool nights in the 50s, had to put a jacket on, and about 70s during the day. So it was nice.
I don't really want to hear it myself.
I know, when we walk outside, our eyes start burning from sweat. Yeah. Just walking to the car in August in Mississippi. And Fred's
in the morning.
Already, yeah,
when Fred, I walk out in the morning, I go, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And Fred, so Fred, muggy.
So we're glad you enjoyed your little fall trip. Good to see everybody,
it
your
was.
Family.
Saw the family, saw my mom. And
I got to ask you, when you go home, I know you want to see the family. That's the primary reason you go. But is there something that's native food-wise to Nova Scotia where you say, man, I can't wait to go eat, fill
lobster.
In the blank.
Lobster.
Lobster. Okay.
That's
lobster.
Not, that's big not surprising.
Right out of the ocean right there.
Oh, wow.
Probably relatively.
We grew up in the ocean.
Relatively cheap, I would guess, to anywhere else in the country.
Much cheaper than your local grocery store.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fred's family evolved.
They evolved?
He just said he grew up in the ocean.
Yeah, on
and
the
then,
ocean.
They migrated to land.
Yes,
that's right. And lost their tail, and got a couple. I went to two legs instead of four, and here we are.
No, we still have.
You're
claws.
The Jacksons.
You're gonna hear it from some of our listeners just for joking about that.
Oh my word! Anyway, so if I go to Nova Scotia, be sure to order the lobster.
So now that's fresh. That you're talking about. You go down to the.
To the
dock and buy it, and then you cook it. You're not talking about eating it at a restaurant or something. Or
well, both ways.
Both ways.
Most of the restaurants up there, and even at the Halifax airport, I fly in from New York into the Halifax capital of Nova Scotia. At the airport, Clearwater, it's a big, big lobster-producing company.
Yeah.
They have a tank that must have about 400 live lobsters in it.
Oh, wow.
And so you can pick your lobster. They'll cook it for you. They deep freeze it. You take it in a box, you can take it home anywhere you're going.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's I'm very jealous of that. It's been a
that's the difference between Nova Scotia and Mississippi, Fred, where you live now. Nova Scotia, you deep freeze.
Uh-huh.
Mississippi, you deep fry. But we do both go deep.
Both go deep.
Both go
I
deep
like
with
it.
The food.
I remember the Gloucester, Mass. They even had lobster flavored Twinkies. It was awesome. Just lobster and everything.
You know, I just thought about something funny. That was funny, even though you're just kidding. Ed grew up in New Hampshire.
That's right.
And you grew up in
Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia. Uh-huh. So Ed was from down south.
That's right.
Am I right?
That's right. Just not the deep south.
That's right.
I was one of those southerners.
Ed was from down south, and he talked funny.
That's right.
Oh, man.
We parked the car.
The people down in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. All right, much to talk about today. By the way, Dr. Robert Jeffress, senior pastor of the First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas, will be with us at the bottom of the hour. He is in studio. Robert's visiting with us today, so we look forward to talking about him about his latest book and why he goes on all these news shows on Fox News and other things to defend Christianity and our value system. We'll talk to Robert about why. I'm sure at First Baptist Church Dallas, he doesn't have to do that.
Right.
You know, he probably makes a good living, as it were, and doesn't need the controversy. But Robert lives for controversy.
Yeah.
So
he's. Like a combat veteran.
Yeah,
I mean,
he is. Robert's
many wars.
He's on the front lines.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Every day. And then if you tell him you got to go to you know, the second tier. He says, no, I'm going back to the front lines.
Yeah.
That's our friend Robert Jeffers. So, also, Governor Phil Bryant will be on with us of Mississippi, coming on at 10:45. That's in about 35 minutes or so. And we're going to talk to him. I get a report on him about the storm that hit Mississippi and Alabama last night and Florida, I guess, the panhandle. I'm not sure how severe the damage, how far the damage went over, but from the storm. But basically, we had him scheduled prior to this to talk about. He says the U.S. Supreme Court needs to define transgender rights. That's important for states to know going forward, and he's going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But okay, Fred, what's happening in the news to lead us off here?
Well, I think yesterday you talked about the opening of the hearing, the Senate Judiciary hearing for Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And he, of course, is the president's latest nominee to sit on the Supreme Court. Now, we kind of knew that this was going to be controversial because from the get-go, when the president made the announcement, the Democrats were determined that they were going to do everything possible to delay. But yesterday, during the opening proceedings of this hearing, I think the United States witnessed something they thought they would never see at a hearing in Washington, D.C. The only way I could describe it, it reminds me of some of the video I've seen from parliaments in other parts of the world where they get into a disagreement, they get up and start fighting each other. I mean, fisticuffs.
You see that kind of thing in like Singapore or something. You know?
That kind of thing. But just to give you an idea, yesterday at the end of the day, 70 people had been arrested, protesters who were inside the room of this hearing. But I want to play for you just an excerpt from the opening. The Senate Judiciary Chairman is Chuck Grassley, Senator Chuck Grassley. They have the opening remarks, welcome everybody, we want to welcome the nominee and his family. That's what is normally done without interruption, but that was not the case yesterday. The Democrat voices you're going to hear almost right off the bat, drowning out or attempting to drown out Senator Grassley, or Senator Kamala Harris, California, who wants to be the next president of the United States, Richard Blumenthal. These are Democrats that start hollering over Senator Grassley as he tries to open up this hearing. Let's hear it.
Good morning. I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of
Mr.
Judge
Chairman.
Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman,
on the
I'd
Supreme
like to be
Court
recognized for a question
States.
Before we proceed.
Regular order.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome
to Judge Kavanaugh. We have not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful hearing on this nominee.
There are two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague.
And on and on and on it went. And like I said, and then there were protesters in the audience who had to be hauled out by security.
Who started at the same time.
Yes.
You
this
know,
is all orchestrated.
Soon after this, yeah.
Orchestrated and planned. By the way, if you want to watch the show, I failed to mention, go to Facebook or YouTube. If you want to watch our show, go to Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues. Walker would normally tell you that, but Walker's not going to be into the bottom of the hour. I was listening to that. Let me ask. So what the Democratic senators, the ones you were saying, Mr. Chairman, I don't know, was that, who was that?
Kamala Harris.
Yeah. From California.
And then someone else came in afterwards.
Another Democrat senator.
Yes.
And so they're in the minority, so they don't have the chairmanship. So they're appealing, as it were, to Senator Grassley, who's pretending not to hear him, I guess. And he was very good at that. He was very good at just keeping on. Huh?
Right.
I don't know if he had cotton in his ears, to keep, you know what I'm saying, earplugs, so he could keep focused. It was a joke, but anyway. He said, but they're saying, oh, man, we got tens of thousands of documents we haven't had time to look at that y'all haven't given us, which may determine whether we vote yes or no on this nominee,
So, yeah, Chuck Grassley said later that the Democrats, Democratic senators interrupted the hearing 63 times before lunch.
Yep.
63 times. Mm-hmm. And I these 70 people who were arrested.
And this doesn't, excuse me for interrupting you, but the, you got the senators who are disrupting the proceedings in a formal way. And then you got sitting behind them who somehow, well, it's open to the public. People first come, first serve. If you go to Washington, D.C. and you go to one of these hearings and you're able to get through security and there's a seat in there in the room, you get to sit down. So I don't know how many seats they had, 100 or so, maybe, probably, something like that, maybe a few more. And so these people get in, and then they go into shouting mode, right, Ed?
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
That's right. So you have 70 people who were arrested, although, as we've talked about in our story meeting, as far as I know, none of them are going to be prosecuted. They were let go at the end of the day. So this is, and second day has opened, and there were more of the same. Mm-hmm. So what we are seeing, I think, and I know we're going to talk about this more, is an increasingly disruptive left. Mm-hmm. No longer the old Democratic Party.
Their hair's on fire.
Yes, that's right. And so just get used to this.
And this
folks.
Was planned.
Yes.
It was admitted yesterday, and Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois admitted this during the hearing. They held a phone call on Sunday night. And this was planned. All right. Right. So this wasn't just off the cuff, some individual senator saying, I'm going to do this today.
Coincidentally, there were protesters. No, this was
orchestrated. Now, this morning on Sandy Rios' program, and we're going to play a little bit of this, a medical doctor, I believe it is from Texas, Dr. Tom Schlieder is his name. He even, apparently he was outside the hearing. But he claimed some of these protesters were actually paid. Who paid them? Well, I'm not sure yet. Am I prepared to say the Democratic Party? We don't know. But I guess he saw money being exchanged. Cut number two.
There were people that had come along and had a bag of money, and the people would hand them a piece of paper, and then they would give them money. So we knew that money was being exchanged for some of the people to be here just to protest. There was no depth to what their understanding was or anything. They were just here to be a protester. And they were actually told, we heard them say this and instruct them, when you go in, we want you to yell, to scream, and even to possibly get arrested.
Rent a crowd.
Who are we hearing right there?
That was Dr. Tom Schlieder. He is from Texas.
Okay.
He apparently was just outside the hearing yesterday.
Okay. Was wanting to attend. I also heard on Sandy's program that the protesters got there early so they could get the seats.
Yes.
Make sure they were in. Mm-hmm. So ordinary citizens who might just be interested in the process were beat to the punch by protesters, some of whom, according to this doctor, medical doctor, were being paid to disrupt the proceedings.
Imagine some guy hanging out there with a bag of money, handing out the money and then telling people what they had to do when they got inside.
This is my opinion is that I'm not saying the entire Democratic Party. I am saying the progressive left is increasingly Marxist, mm-hmm. and this is what Marxists and communists do, they disrupt.
They're this close to violence.
Yes.
Physical violence. Huh? These people. These people you heard screaming in the background, it wouldn't be surprised me if they didn't walk outside the hearing rooms and throw Coke bottles at the windows. That's where they are.
Yes, and one of the things that was being shouted by some of these that could be heard protesting in the back of the room was "Sham president, sham justice." This is the one of the strangest things about the election of Donald Trump is it has triggered these people perhaps earlier than they might have, you know, been triggered, but the election of Donald Trump has brought them all out in the open, you know, these kind of violent people.
Well, and it was expressed by Madonna the day after the inauguration. Mm-hmm. She sort of set the tone for how this was going to go for Hollywood and many in the entertainment industry and celebrities and the progressive left in other ways, New York, L.A. crowd, and these far lefties. They were going to, she said, I've thought many times, this is Madonna, remember this? Mm-hmm. I've thought many times about blowing up the White House. Right. Didn't know what she said? I basically got it right. Mm-hmm. Okay, she was cheered for that moment. Imagine President Obama was in office and there was a demonstration the day after on the Washington Mall, and some famous celebrity who's a conservative, oh, there are a few of them, got up and said, let's say Toby Keith, for example, got up and told the crowd and said, hey, I've thought many times about going over there and bombing that White House. Did she say bombing or burning it down or blowing it up. That's what Madonna said. Now, imagine had Toby Keith done what Madonna did about when President Obama was in the office. Mm-hmm. What do you think would have happened there?
Oh, huh? Mainstream media would have went.
Oh, his career would have been over.
Yes.
His career right then and there. And he would have been taken off the stage by the people who were hosting the event.
Yes.
Because that's that kind of vitriol, that kind of language is unacceptable to mainstream conservative Americans, right?
Right.
We wouldn't let anybody on this network who advocated assassinating President Obama or threatening his family or anything like that, and we're as conservative as you can get, you know, because you've got to have law and order, you got to have civility, manners, and beyond that, for Christians, we have to have an attitude we're serving the Most High God, President Obama, whoever it is really not our enemy.
Right.
It's a spiritual battle. Now, it's a political battle in Washington, but you get my point here.
Yeah.
You have certain standards you have to live up to, whatever your opposition is. That's what I'm saying. But for the political left, the secular left, the Madonna types, they don't believe in God, all right, or any kind of God that holds them personally accountable for their actions and their words and their attitudes. They don't get on their knees every night like we Christians do and say, God, help me to be more like Jesus tomorrow. They don't believe in
that. And forgive me for the thoughts I had today.
Yeah, forgive me for my sins today and help me be more like Christ tomorrow.
I had bad thoughts about so-and-so. I thought about maybe, whatever.
It was wrong.
Forgive me.
Right. Forgive me. It was a sin.
Yeah.
Okay, these people on the other side, they don't believe in that. No. This is all they're living for is the here and now and today. Raw power that they want to use. They hate Christians and Christianity, and they express this more openly often. They think, and to them, President Trump represents Christianity and conservative thought, and which basically is based on Christian values, if you look at it biblically. So that's why they can't stand us. They hate us. They would rather us. We're the basket of deplorables.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're
clinging to our guns and our Bible.
Yeah, President Obama mocked us, saying on the radio in San Francisco when I guess he didn't think this would go national. Remember, he was running for office, and he said, these people cling to their guns and their Bibles. That's what he's talking about us. If it were up to these people, they would get rid of us.
Yeah.
Send us off to an island somewhere. It probably wouldn't be in the Caribbean.
That's right.
Probably be Greenland or somewhere.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Greenland. But you see what I'm saying?
Right.
So the people that were in that room yesterday in the Senate that we heard, they're Madonnas.
Yeah.
Is who they are. And so they are that. The only thing holding them back from physical violence against conservatives, against Sarah Huckabee.
Sanders. When she's out to eat.
Is that they might go to, they might get arrested and go to prison.
Right.
That's the only thing holding these people back, and some of them aren't going to be held back by that because, as you said, they disrupted and the hearings yesterday, and they didn't have handcuffs or go to prison.
You get the odd one here and there that goes to the baseball field or the softball field, whatever, and starts shooting Republicans.
That's a one-day story.
Yeah.
You know, you shoot if you were to shoot a Democrat, it'd been all over the news.
Right.
Anyway, that's what we're having to contend with today. It's unfair to Judge Kavanaugh, quite frankly, completely unfair to him. He's one man taking on multiple senators for multiple days who've had their staffs digging into his past for the last 6 weeks or whenever it was he was named, and they're going to drag this stuff out. Some obscure something he said or wrote that he can't even probably remember, and they're going to say, did you say that? And then if he, did you write that? And he goes, what did you mean? Well, if he says he doesn't recall, they're going to, oh, come on.
Right.
You're going to tell me you wrote this in 1989 and you don't recall.
And you got Kamala Harris saying, we need these documents. Meanwhile, what's become clear is they have demanded more than 400,000 documents related to Kavanaugh's nomination. When you take the last five nominees of the Supreme Court, add all the documents together, it is a fraction of that.
Yep.
And to your point, Tim, they're behaving as if these documents could mean the difference between voting yes or no, when Kamala Harris wouldn't vote for Kavanaugh if he was a saint in heaven come to earth.
Right.
And a lot of these documents have to do with Kavanaugh's time before he was on the bench. He worked for the Bush administration.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with legal opinions.
Yes.
Whatsoever. But they're trying to make a big deal of that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. As I've said many times, we could have taken the vote on this this nominee the day that President Trump was elected. You know, you could take a vote on the Supreme Court. Democrats
whoever,
are going to vote.
Whoever he nominates.
The Democrats are going to vote
I'm
no.
against.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. If there's no... Nothing else. If there's no bombshell here, that's a bad metaphor coming off Madonna's I'll burn the White House, blow the White House up. Anyway, Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed whenever they vote. I guess early next week or something like that. But, man, is Patrick Leahy going to live forever?
He never seems to change, does he?
Well, he looked like that in... Maybe a little younger when Bork was being Bork. Remember that?
Bork, yep.
Was that 90s or 80s? When was that?
Was that 86? Was it that far
I
back?
I believe it was, yeah.
It was under Reagan,
when
wasn't
Judge Bork, that's when all this started,
yeah.
By the way. All right, we will, Judge Kavanaugh, he's doing good.
Mm-hmm.
He must have got a good night's sleep. Huh? All right, we will return in a few minutes here on Today's Issues here on American Family Radio with the show Today's Issues. Dr. Robert Jeffress will be joining us as well. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the very first day in Israel, when we're staying in Jerusalem, we go to the Mount of Olives. And it's there at the Mount of Olives we look out over the old city of Jerusalem. It's a spectacular sight. You've seen it in pictures before, but it's another thing to actually be there as we walk down from the Mount of Olives to the Garden of Gethsemane and we pray there. It's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country visiting the Holy Land, the land of Jesus. If you want information on this March 14th through the 22nd tour, just call us and we'll send you a brochure. Call 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address and we'll mail you a brochure. Or if you want to simply go online at twholyland.com, everything's there, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Stearns from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Barring some unforeseen meltdown among Republicans, Brett Kavanaugh will be a justice on the Supreme Court. A good and decent man, impeccable academic credentials, educated at Yale, a renowned jurist. He's a devout Roman Catholic, tutors kids at a Jesuit academy, feeds the homeless on the weekends. He's a faithful husband and father. He coaches a girls' basketball team. Kavanaugh reminded us of his regular Joe status during his confirmation hearing. The Los Angeles Times says it's a way to humanize the judge, which is sadly necessary because the Democrats are trying to demonize the man. It's the new normal in American politics to destroy human beings, to smear their good names. It was a shameful thing made even worse because Brett Kavanaugh's teenage daughters were front and center, watching a seething mob of angry Democrats make fools of themselves. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We've been taking a peek at the Senate hearings in Washington, D.C., where they are questioning/grilling Judge Kavanaugh there as his Supreme Court hearings. And I think Chuck Grassley from Iowa is about to take on Patrick Leahy from Vermont.
Fisticuffs.
Just watching their body language on TV here.
You talking to me?
Huh?
You talking to me, Patrick?
I think Leahy just went over there. No, Grassley just went over there and took away Leahy's AARP card. He just took it away and said, I'll take this. And I don't know what's going to happen next up there. But anyway, I tell you what, man, and this is no disrespect to senior citizens. You get to be 80. You need to leave the Senate and go home and enjoy your
grandchildren. What are you
looking at me for? Well, I'm not looking at you for any particular reason. You need to go home and enjoy your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren in your last years of life. You don't need to be called Mr. Senator for another 10 years.
Right.
When you can't even hear them.
Well, some people, now this is good. This is, I probably will have to apologize for this. Some people love some things more than their grandchildren. That's the way I look at it. Yeah. If you've served for 30 or 40 years in the Senate,
and you
still don't want to go home and be with your grandkids,
John McCain wouldn't even resign when he had terminal brain cancer.
Then you just love something more than your grandkids. Just admit it.
Yeah.
Admit it.
Anyway, that's not thus saith the Lord, people. That was just my opinion, and Ed had his right there.
A little bit of soapbox.
We have with us, and we're delighted to have with us, our good friend in studio, Dr. Robert Jeffress. He's a senior pastor of the First. Slow down, Tim. Just slow down. He's a senior pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, and he's the host of Pathway to Victory, which is heard each morning, weekday morning, here on American Family Radio. That's a Bible teaching program. And he is a frequent guest on the Fox News Channel. On various shows, defending Christianity and our values and our freedoms. And he's, I guess you could call Robert a counselor in a way to President Trump. They've been friends for 3 years now. And he joins us in studio. Good morning, Robert.
Great to be with you guys.
Do you mean that, Robert? Or is that just,
no.
You have to be
I'm,
here.
I'm
no, he doesn't
last
mean
last night in Tupelo, had my four tacos at the Taco Bell. Everything's great. I love being in Tupelo.
Those are good tacos. You
Those
mentioned
are
that
good.
Twice.
I heard you used to make a family run through there and get the cinnamon twist.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Love Taco Bell cinnamon. Huh? They are. Yeah. They are. You got a, I don't have it in front of me.
I've got it. Always have a copy. Brand new book.
You need to have a copy of your brand new book. Yes. Tell us about your brand new book.
It's called Choosing the Extraordinary Life, God's Seven Secrets for Success and Significance. And it came out just yesterday. Brand new, already doing great.
Is it on, so you can order it now on the internet or you can buy it at a bookstore?
Either one.
Or you can go to afastore.net. We have it on sale as well. afastore.net. afastore.net.
Yeah.
I'll say it again, afastore.net. But or you can go to your local Christian bookstore or whatever. Probably got it in secular
bookstores. It's Barnes & Noble.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
It's everywhere. And, you know, it's a book about how to experience in the here and now what God has for you. I wrote A Place Called Heaven last year to talk about what awaits us after we die, but you don't have to die to have a great life.
Right.
You can experience it now. And I was telling the group this morning about the Chicago sewer worker who was asked, well, tell us, what is your life like? He said, well, I dig the ditch to earn the money, to buy the bread, to get the strength to dig the ditch. And that was his life. And unfortunately, that's the life of a lot of Christians right now. God wants more for you than that. And I use the story of Elijah, who was an ordinary person, the Bible says, but God used him in an extraordinary way. And I use his life to show those seven secrets for a successful and significant life.
Now, when I hear what the last sentence you just used, when I hear that sometimes from pastors, I think, so there's a formula you're saying I can, A, B, C, D, E equals great life? Is that always true?
The key is in the title, choosing. These secrets I talk about are really choices that we make in our life. And our life is the sum result of our choices that we make. And a successful, extraordinary life is made up of extraordinary years, extraordinary days, months, hours. And these are seven godly, biblical choices we need to make.
Well, and the fact of the matter is Christianity, in a lot of respects, is about choices.
Yeah.
I mean, God lays out in his word. Sometimes there's some mystery about the Christian life, but in many cases, there are clear instructions to the Christian about how they are to live their life because God had purpose in the way he created us and in the way we are to conduct ourselves in our marriages, how we are to raise our children, how we are to form communities, church communities, and how we are to interact in the culture and the kinds of things that lead to blessing in life and the kinds of things that lead to, well, the book of Proverbs talks about the wise man, the foolish man. There's choices all shot through the Bible.
Yeah, and I talk about seven of those things like discover your unique purpose in life. You know, God created us for a general purpose to glorify him, but he's got a specific story he wants to tell through our life. And I talk about that. I talk about unleashing the power of prayer, living your life with the end in view. But one of those choices that Elijah made that's relevant to this program is to determine to influence your culture. Elijah just didn't speak to the believing Israelites. He went and confronted an ungodly government and said, thus saith the Lord. And there has to be times that we stand up and say, we're not just going to speak to our holy huddle. We're going to go outside the holy huddle and actually engage in the culture. And you know, there's a strange idea that you all deal with all the time, that God only cares about the church. No, God cares about the church, but he also created government. He created lots of institutions to conform to his will. And if we're going to have an extraordinary life, we've got to be that salt and light God commanded us to be.
In your book, you talk about bad days.
Yeah.
We all have bad days, but there are positives that God can work through our bad days.
Well, right. And look, if you're going to have an extraordinary life, you got to know that there are going to be some bad days, some bad seasons of life where disappointments pile up. Elijah had those. You know, he had the great victory on Mount Carmel, and then he fell into a funk. And, you know, 800 prophets of Baal didn't faze him, but one angry woman who was after his hide sent him on the run. And when we have those times, those bad seasons in life, Elijah illustrates how to deal with those bad days. We need to, you know, sometimes we need to refresh ourselves physically. God told Elijah to lay down, sleep. The angels provided some cakes. That's the first example of angel food cake in the Bible, by the way. And I just tell people, sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is take a nap. And Elijah did that. He refreshed himself emotionally and spiritually. But extraordinary people learn how to handle those tough seasons of life.
Amen. So your assignment today, people, is to go buy a copy of Robert's new book, It's called Choosing the Extraordinary Life. What's the subtitle?
God's Seven Secrets for Success and Significance.
By our guest, Dr. Robert Jeffress. It's not Jeffers. I tell you people every time. It's Jeffress. Robert has to deal with that his whole life, hadn't you, Robert?
I've gotten along. You don't call me anything. Just call me.
Don't call me late for supper. Right. Is that what they say? But Dr. Jeffress' new book is out. We encourage you to get it. And you can get it at our website, and by the way, if you want to order it there at afastore.net, afastore.net. Also, your book on heaven is still on the bestseller list.
A Place Called Heaven. It's been on the bestseller list every month since it released in September.
So, congratulations.
God did it because people are interested because of that. And also, President Trump tweeted an endorsement, both of those.
Well, that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, that didn't help.
That didn't hurt either. Let me ask you about that. A lot of people are curious about your relationship with the president. How did you meet Donald Trump?
Well, it was really funny. He like he meets a lot of people through television. I mean, he tells the story all the time. He said, I used to see you on TV, but I didn't pay that much attention to you because you weren't talking about me. But after he announced for president, he saw me one night on Fox, and he said to Melania, who in the H-E double hockey stick is right. That guy said, look at his mouth move. It moves like a machine gun. I never want that machine gun mouth used against me. So he reached out to me, and I came up to Trump Tower. We sat down and visited, and we became friends. It was about 3 years
That's
ago.
That's how that happened.
That's how it happened.
Okay. Was that before or after he announced he was running?
It was about 3 or 4 weeks after he announced.
Before he announced he was going to run the Republican primary.
Right. And nobody thought he had a chance.
Well, listen.
July of 2015.
Yeah. I was going to say you were. I don't know if you were the earliest, but certainly the earliest I remember in the Christian community who supported the president. I think we interviewed you on this program when we were across the street, and you were talking about
when our studio was
across the street, and you were talking about why you thought he was the one that God. Mm. Was going to put in that office, and we were kind of, come on, this guy really, and I remember thinking, I don't think he's the guy, but you were in his corner from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, besides having the right policies, I thought of the 16 that was running, he was the only one who was electable.
Right.
I mean, you know, we had some great friends who were running, some people who had preached in my church, great guys, but I knew the country had moved too far to the left for them to ever be elected.
That's interesting. So you're a very pragmatic person.
You have to be in politics. I mean, electability is one thing you have to consider.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But a lot of our fellow Christians say, no, you're choosing pragmatism over principle. And I have to tell them, you can do you don't do that in your Christian life. Always choose principle. But in American politics. You have to be pragmatic. Well, you have to be pragmatic in many parts of life, and pragmatic's not always a sin.
No.
It just means you have to figure out the best way to do something.
But the key to understanding is, look, God created the church and he created government, both of which are for different functions and both of which necessitate different skill sets. I mean, we all believe morality is important.
Right, right.
But I think, you know, it's the number one requirement for a minister of the gospel, and I think the Catholic Church scandal has shown why we need moral pastors or priests or whatever. But when it comes to government, is that the most important consideration? Jimmy Carter was probably the most moral president that we've had in decades, but he didn't have leadership capabilities. So leadership and that function is probably the primary requirement.
We want, Fred, to have, you know, our desire is that we have, you know, people in elected office, including the presidency, who reflect the Judeo-Christian value system, who revere God and the Bible. But that's not always possible.
Last week I was on NPR, Rachel Martin, and she said, you know, how is it that a Christian like you could surrender your principles and vote for somebody who's not moral like Donald Trump? I said, wait a minute. In 2016, we had a binary choice between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. In whose moral universe would Hillary Clinton be more moral than Donald Trump? I mean, we're all sinners. We've all fallen short. We have to make choices.
And I tell you one other thing, Fred, and I'll dominate the conversation here if you don't mind. because my name's on the show, Fred, and I'm just teasing. Fred, I'm going to let Fred ask a question of Dr. Jefferson in just a second. But you know what? When we elect a president, you're right. We in this case, you're left with two choices. One of them is going to be president. One of them is going to set the tone for the country. One of them is going to attack Christians or leave Christians alone.
That's right.
One of them is going to set the direction for the Supreme Court for a generation. Do you want your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, I would ask you, this is what most Christians considered, having to deal with the decisions of a very far-left Supreme Court? Or do you want, in this case of Hillary Clinton, or do you want President Trump having a chance to correct the Supreme Court and to give us conservative justices? And the Christian community evaluated all that. They considered the background, the history of Mr. Trump, which was not something to be proud of. When you some of the things right. that he did, and he acknowledged that in the way that he does.
Yeah.
So all that was baked in, and people said, you know, I'm going to give Mr. Trump a chance. And he has been the friendliest president to Christians that we've had since Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. You know, President Obama had Ramadan celebrations every other month, and even though it wasn't Ramadan.
Ramadan somewhere.
In the way, that's a country song. Right there. Jimmy Buffett sang that. It's Ramadan somewhere. Anyway. My point is, President Obama celebrated every religion, especially Islam, all the time, seemingly, but gave no respect at all to Christianity. President Trump at least is friendly to us.
Right.
And tries to connect with us and wants to understand. He calls Robert Jefferson and says, what's this about? Or
right.
calls one of our friends. So he cares. He
and
wants to know.
That's what I tell people, Tim. I said, look, he may not be exactly like us,
right.
but at least he likes us.
Yeah.
He hates us like the last
It's nice to be liked instead of being a basket of deplorables.
Yes, that's right.
I got invited, like Robert did, to go to the White House a week or so ago. And you know, it was nice to be wanted.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
There's a country song.
Is that a country song, Ian? You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Robert, thanks for being with us. You're going to be on some of the other programs during the day here on American Family Radio.
We're wearing them out today.
Again, the title of the book?
Choosing the Extraordinary Life, God's Seven Secrets for Success and Significance, available at all bookstores, online, and at
afastore.net.
Hi, Fred, I lied to you, man. I'm sorry.
I'm hosting for Brian Fisher today.
So you can just ask Robert a whole bunch of
questions. I've got a bunch of questions, okay. folks. You got to tune in.
Okay, just say, so you're hosting for Brian Fisher today.
Who's on vacation.
Yep. Okay, so 1:05 Central Time.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we want to go now to our guest, Governor Phil Bryant. He is Mississippi. He's on the phone with us. I think Governor Bryant's on the Gulf Coast due to the storm that's hit the Mississippi, Alabama, Florida Gulf Coast area. Governor Bryant, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim. I am on the Gulf Coast. I'm just now in the office of the Director of EOC, Emergency Management Office, here in Gulfport, Mississippi, in Harrison County, and we're very happy this morning. We could have had a terrible tropical storm and or hurricane, Category 1 hurricane, and it just simply stopped. It was one of the most amazing things. About 10 o'clock last night, it slowed, turned into heavy rain and about 35-mile-an-hour winds, and so no one's hurt, no damage. We are blessed this morning on the Mississippi Gulf Coast.
So you can go back to the governor's mansion today, huh?
I may make it tomorrow. We've got some other events that take place down here. And so I'm going to linger for a while to make sure we clean everything up, probably head back first thing in the morning.
Well, yeah, praise the Lord that that wasn't a major storm, and the things you described there, good news to our ears.
Amen. And now it's in the central part of the state, so you'll probably, even in Tupelo, you could probably feel some wind and some rain on the outer bands. This thing moved through. I know it was heavy raining about 6 a.m. I was on the phone this morning in central Mississippi and Jackson area with flash flood warnings and heavy wind. So it's still moving across the state. We ask everyone to just be mindful of it, be careful when you're driving, and watch for those low-level areas.
Exactly. Well, I want you to talk about another issue that we wanted to discuss with you. That is, I read a headline from a story, and it was quoting you, and the headline said, Mississippi wants U.S. Supreme Court to define transgender rights.
Yep.
What is that about?
We do, and it's always interesting to see, Tim, how the media responds to this as if I've done something horrible. And they're just shocked by the fact that I would join in with 16 other states in a writ of certiorari that began by the Attorney General Doug Peterson, the fine Attorney General of Nebraska, as he began to ask the Supreme Court, and that's what a writ of certiorari does, is say we hope the High Court will hear this decision in Harris Funeral Home versus the EEOC. And what took place during the Obama administration is they had the desire to do. The EEOC was trying to make federal law. So in this case, in this particular case of Harris Funeral Home, someone who I believe transgender may be the appropriate term for it, but decided that he would not wear the uniform of the Harris Funeral Home, that and rather he would come dressed as a female. And the owners of the funeral home said, look, we are very respectful and mindful of the families of those that are departed that are now being managed by the funeral home and how respectful that that ceremony is for someone who's lost a loved one. And here we have a man dressing as a female. And he said, I can't have you doing that. I'm going to dismiss you. They then filed a suit with the EEOC, and the EEOC under the Obama administration said you can't do that, that they had ruled that that individual would be protected, that his gender identity would be protected under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so we believe, along with Nebraska and Alabama, Kansas, Oklahoma, the other states, that the Supreme Court should rule on this one decision, not whether or not the condition of the man who now believes that he needs to be dressed as a woman needs to stay at work, or they can fight that out later. But does a federal agency have the right to change federal law enacted by the United States Congress? And, of course, the answer is no, they don't. The elected representatives in this great republic form of government make that decision, as they did in 1964, and that's where the decision must be made, and we're asking the federal courts to help us send that message loud and clear.
Governor Bryant, Ed Vitagliano here. One of the things that's confusing for a lot of people is you mentioned the 1964 Civil Rights Act, where it prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex.
Right.
So that has always been interpreted as you can't discriminate on the basis of male and female. What the transgender movement is now saying is that if in this case that you cited, where all this the hullabaloo has erupted over, if a man says, I am a woman, then the Civil Rights Act applies. How did we get here to where the federal government is siding with that kind of thinking?
We got here during the Obama administration. We got here when all of those transgender issues were paramount to the president and his administration. And again, not only were they using their particular beliefs to say, we're going to force you at Harris Funeral Home to do this, they were violating what we believe is federal law when they did it. And, of course, they did it through the EPA as well when they were moving on the waters of the USA and coming out on people's lands and saying, we in the federal government now can tell you what to do with your ponds and your lakes and your streams, and we can fine you if you don't abide by this. So the Obama administration, rather than going to Congress and saying, let's do the appropriate thing, and if we want to change that law to add this sort of gender identity, which I don't think they would ever have gotten passed through Congress, but rather than doing that, they said, we're just going to make a rule. And if we have to go to court, we'll sue and settle. And they would do that quite often. They would go to a local court, like the Sixth Circuit Court, and they would find a liberal federal judge for this lawsuit. And then they would have that judge rule in their favor. If it was something that, for example, the EPA was filing a lawsuit against some property owner, they would go in and say, oh, we think the EPA is correct. The judge said, okay, well, if you're agreeing to settle this matter, then we're going to make that federal law. So they were using all sorts of federal courts, administrative procedures to change federal law. We're going to ask the Supreme Court, never mind the issue, never mind how you feel about this gender equality, gender identity, can a federal agency affect the United States Congress and change the laws of the land, and we don't believe they can.
Talking to Governor Phil Bryan of Mississippi, there are many states who are wanting direction from the Supreme Court on how to handle these transgendered issues. According to this story I'm reading, it says the attorney generals in Alabama, Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, West Virginia, Wyoming have joined Nebraska in asking the Supreme Court of the United States to give them some direction on
Kentucky
this.
And Maine. So this is just not one governor of Mississippi.
Right.
I tend to draw a lot of attention on these matters, but
yes, you do.
As we look at Maine and Kansas and Nebraska,
right.
Tennessee, those attorney generals were involved in the process. I believe I am the only governor that entered into this writ of certiorari. The others were attorney generals.
Let me ask you this. House Bill 1523, I think it was called, which we talked
right.
to you about. We talked to you about a year and a half
Religious
ago
Freedom
or so.
Act.
And what this was a religious freedom law for the state of Mississippi that was passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Bryant. And then the LGBT community said that this was discrimination. It was going to harm people who were of that persuasion in the state of Mississippi. And here we are a year and a half later, and we have not one example of how this religious liberty law has discriminated against LGBT people.
Oh, you know, we were sued, and
yes.
and a federal judge said, you know, we're dismissing this portion of the lawsuit because there's been no harm. He couldn't find one person that could come into the
right.
court of law and say, let me show you how I've been harmed by this. And you remember, Tim,
yes.
my goodness, the secular society, the media went absolutely berserk over this. Why, this was the most hated. This was laws and actions
right.
since Jim Crow. People's businesses were going to be shut down. Folks were going to be thrown out of restaurants. They were going to be mistreated. The only people I see being thrown out of restaurants and mistreated now are people that support the President of the United States. And it's being done by people on the left.
Bingo. You just bingoed.
Bingo.
Yes.
Governor Bryan, one quick question. You mentioned back to the transgender, defining the transgender rights, that in all these other states it was the Attorney General who asked the Supreme Court for. I'm just curious why that didn't happen in our state, Mississippi. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of reasons. We just have not, in these particular matters, have a lot of success with working with our attorney general. they seem not to be as passionate about it, and if they take on the case, it's somewhat delayed and slowed. I remember in 1523, our attorney general said that the Republican leaders in this state, me included, had duped the leaders of the churches across Mississippi, duped. I not only was offended by that, but I was offended for the leaders of the churches and synagogues across the state of Mississippi that somehow they would be naive enough to let politicians dupe them into supporting a law that defended religious freedom. So in matters such as these, we trust our lawyers, we trust other attorney generals and those attorneys that donate their time and effort to help us defend this.
I would suspect in some states the attorney in the federal government, the attorney general works for the president. Okay, that's not true on many state levels. In
no, they are
two separate offices.
They are elected in many states and can be in different parties as they are here in the state of Mississippi.
Governor Bryant, thanks so much for your
time.
All
right, gentlemen, thank
See
you.
Bye-bye.
And just God bless you for what you do. We'll keep the fight up.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's Governor Phil Bryant joining us from the Gulf Coast. And he said, at least for the Mississippi Gulf Coast, he said they escaped a lot of damage that could have otherwise happened
right.
with that storm last night, which went down in severity.
De-escalated.
Yeah, de-escalated. All right, thank you so much for joining us this hour, everybody. We're going to take a break for news, and then we shall return in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.